From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and this is a show where we all know that the truth will set you free, but the question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? Every week we deal with mental health-related issues from a holistic perspective, which means body, mind, and spirit, and creating a balance, and this week is no different. And since June is Gay Pride Month, we're going to deal with spirituality and the issue of homosexuality, and today's topic is homosexuality and religion. And that is something that you can find in the paper almost every day, if not every day, somewhere, dealing with the conflict about conservative groups, liberal groups, how the issue of homosexuality, gay marriage, gay rights is brought into the political arena. And usually in the concept or usually in the context of conservative, fundamental Christian, and not just Christian, but fundamentalist groups of all denominations. So here we are dealing with the conflict between separation of church and state, but also dealing with the issues of spiritual conflict and social issues that face all of us. Now, as a gay man who happens to be a therapist who have dealt a lot with my own sense of spirituality, which is why my approach is more holistic, because I believe that you cannot deal with psychotherapy without addressing the issues of how people were raised in terms of religious beliefs, in terms of spiritual beliefs, in terms of what kind of perceived or actual abuse they dealt with within the context of their organized religion, if they were raised in one, what kind of questions as they grew into adolescence and adulthood that they found themselves asking about their own personal relationship with God or a higher power, however they're defining it. And this is an issue faced by everyone, whether they're gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, or heterosexual. These are natural questions that people ask, or hopefully they ask. Now, there are a lot of people that are raised in certain very strict and fundamentalist denominations where they're taught not to ask and not to question. And sometimes there is an internal struggle going on, whether it's because of sexuality issues or what they're seeing in the society around them, that they're just questioning what they're being taught and social mores and how they fit into the world in relationship to their religious upbringing. It's questions I think people are naturally dealing with, and some people feel guilty about even asking the questions. Is what I'm being taught and what I'm believing and how I'm living the right way to treat one another? Now, my personal belief is every religion at its core and at its foundation is based on the golden rule, do as to others as you would have them do unto you. All right, I really do believe that. I believe that every great teacher, whether it's Moses or Jesus or Buddha or Muhammad, taught love others and don't judge others, and that the basis of every religion is unconditional love. And I really believe that as things got organized over the centuries and eons, human egos got involved and brought to the fore a lot of rules and constraints and things that may have been based on power struggles, may have been based on trying to increase the numbers of a certain group or religion for power and security. and for a lot of other reasons. I also know that a lot of people quote the Bible as their backup for teaching discrimination and hatred and things like that. But I also know that the Bible in its original language meant something very different than the many times over translated and reinterpreted Bible that we deal with in English today, whether it's the Old Testament or the New Testament. And so those are my beliefs. I was raised Jewish, and as someone who very early on knew that there was something different about me in terms of my sexuality, even before I knew or understood what sexuality was, I look back and I realize the Judaism that I was raised in, I never remember the issues of sexuality or homosexuality being raised or addressed. Most of the impact and input that I received growing up came more from cultural and societal pressures and judgments. So I knew that something inside me had to be held secret because it was something that would have been judged by my peers more than my rabbi or Sunday school. It just wasn't an issue that was addressed and certainly not discussed in my home. And like in many homes, sex in general is not an issue that's discussed. So most kids get their information from the media, from their peers, and you know, that's where their struggles lie even more because of peer pressure and judgment. So with all that being said, I remind all of you that this is a live call-in show, and if you're in the Phoenix area and you're one of our KXAM listeners, the local number is area code 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310. And if you're listening via the Internet, as I know some of you are out there because I get emails from some of you anywhere else in the country, it's still a toll number. It's the same number, 480-949-1310. You're welcome to participate in today's discussion. And my guest today actually is somebody who's been addressing this issue in terms of his own religious upbringing and homosexuality. And he actually put a lot of this on the screen in a movie that's actually opening, has been opening around the country since January, but opens in Scottsdale at the Harkins Camel View 5 on June 11th, a movie called Latter Days, which deals with his growing up experience in the Mormon Church or Church of Latter-day Saints. My guest today is C.J. Cox, and he's the writer and director of that movie. He's also the screenwriter for Sweet Home Alabama, if any of you have seen that, and I know many have because it was quite a successful picture. And I want to read something here from the website for Latter Days, and it's a quote from CJ. And he says, "See, as a kid, I felt more inclined towards the Hollywood version of celestial glory, like in Heaven Can Wait. I can still remember how I longingly gazed at that movie poster, those angelic wings on Warren Beatty. Oh, yeah, that was probably my second clue. There are those that find ourselves on the outside looking in. Growing up in cowboy country on the Utah border in a dusty place ruled by pickup trucks and rodeos, I realized that I was different. Even as a boy, I knew I had an undeniable secret urge. I knew I was a closet filmmaker." So, CJ, the filmmaker, and somebody who, because of his film, has actually turned into somewhat of a activist, whether he wanted to or not. CJ, welcome to the show today.
Well, thank you, Stuart. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. And can you, I hope you don't mind if I say that knowing you somewhat and from the things I've seen written that much of the film has a certain tinge of autobiographical content, since you did grow up as someone in the Mormon Church and also was a missionary, which is the premise of this film, a missionary being assigned to, a young missionary guy being assigned to Los Angeles to do his missionary work and ends up, in a sense, falling in love with a local West Hollywood pretty boy and having to deal with a lot of how the church reacts to that in his own coming to terms. Was that basically your motivation in doing this film?
Well, I didn't set out to make a movie that was strictly autobiographical, and in that sense, it's really not. But I do feel at different points in my life, I did have experience as both of those characters. I was a Mormon missionary when I was 19, and then later did come out, find myself living as a gay man in Los Angeles. And so I feel that the movie speaks from both of those characters speak from a personal perspective. So I do identify with both of those characters, and that there is a certain amount of autobiographical content, I guess, in just writing from my own experience.
You know that the general theme of today's show is religion and homosexuality, not just what's going on with the Mormons. But there's a website I went to, actually the University of Phoenix has this section on homosexuality questions, common questions and statements addressed on religious views, and
uh-huh.
It lists the various denominations. And under Mormons or the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, it says the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or LDS, has the most anti-gay policies of any religion widely practiced in the United States. And there's also the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints adopted a policy to include sexual orientation in their anti-discrimination policies. I know you've gotten a lot of feedback, both
mm-hmm.
positive and negative, from different circles of the Mormon Church. What's your experience with your own acceptance or lack of acceptance, and what's going on with transformation within the Mormon Church before we talk about religion more in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really interesting topic, kind of on a broad basis, just, I mean, with what's going on in this country, kind of politically and everything. But specifically with the Mormon Church, I think what the University of Phoenix is saying is correct. Currently, in my experience and what I've read and looking at the kind of the political climate, the Mormon Church, officially known as the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is different than the Reorganized Church, the Mormon Church is currently one of the most actively, virulently homophobic organizations in the country. A lot of what you see going on with, say, constitutional amendments that are being passed in states to outlaw gay marriage, those are being funded by the Mormon Church. The case that went to the Supreme Court about the Boy Scouts not allowing gay scout leaders, that was really prompted by a threat from the church to pull their support of scouting. Since the Mormon Church sponsors one in every four scout troops in the country, it would have bankrupted Boy Scouting. So a lot of what is happening in the political climate that is sort of this anti-gay agenda that is going on is coming from the Mormon Church, whereas they're trying to put a public face on it, saying that they're becoming more tolerant of gay members, but at the same time they're working very strenuously to not allow gay people in this country to have the same rights as everybody else. Which
I think is information that would surprise a lot of people, because I think that more of the evangelistic fundamentalist Christian groups seem to get blamed for so much more of it. It's just that they're more verbal and they're the ones on the picket lines, and it sounds like the Mormon Church are a little bit more in the closet, so to speak, in terms of their anti-gay activities.
Absolutely. I mean, putting a public face on it of saying that they're trying to be more tolerant, whereas behind the scenes, putting millions and millions of dollars of their members' tithing money into, you know, presenting a political agenda, into influencing secular legislation. I know that in California several years ago, there was sort of outrage over the Catholic Archdiocese donating $300,000 to fund the Knight Initiative, which was basically an anti-gay initiative in California, whereas the Mormon Church quietly put in between $3 and $4 million, but none of that was made public.
How are they able to keep all this so hush-hush?
Well, because I think that there is a sort of, with I think, which is common with a lot of religions, a culture that is engendered about not questioning the authority of the church, or that what the church leaders do is is not subject to public scrutiny,
so to speak.
Absolutely.
Right. Mm-hmm. In the opening of this, now I know that this has been an independent film, that you had backers, that it's been opening around the country. I know it started in New York and L.A. going back to January, that you've entered it in many film festivals and have actually won many awards, including more recently in Toronto's Gay Film Festival. Obviously, it's been well received within the gay community, I would assume, especially the way the festivals have been responding. Has it been entered in, has Latter Days been entered in any more necessarily non-gay festivals, and what has been the reaction more so from the society at large and the film goers at large?
Well, it's interesting because we've also screened it at straight film festivals, I guess, if you want to call them that.
Or non-gay.
Right, Fort Lauderdale or Palm Springs International Film Festival, where we were in, I think, where we placed in the top 10 movies and the audience favorites, things like that. So we've had a similar response in a lot of our screenings.
Now, I also understand that there was a lot of conflict in Salt Lake City with its opening, and at first it was scheduled, and then it was pulled. And, you know, when I think the way you had told it to me is when the movie theater that had canceled it saw that this film was actually making money, they changed their tune, and it actually ended up opening at that theater in Salt Lake City. What was the conflict there?
I guess it turned out a little different than that. It was a matter of a theater chain that was going to carry it in Salt Lake. About 10 days before the opening, we got word from somebody within the chain that there were threats of boycotts and pickets and protests,
mm-hmm,
if the movie opened there. And so they pulled the movie from release in their theaters in Salt Lake. But it was interesting because then they made a public statement saying that the movie lacked artistic merit and didn't hold up to their criteria for screening. Although they did say that they were anxious to screen it in theaters in other areas of the country, which made me believe that maybe there was a double standard for Salt Lake and the rest of the country. But then when we opened in Salt Lake in New York and Los Angeles on June 30th, we were one of the highest per screen averages for any opening. We were actually the highest per screen average for any film opening that weekend. And so then we did get calls from another theater in Salt Lake that was anxious to kind of book us, but it took another couple of months to actually get into.
So it's actually a different theater in Salt Lake.
It was a different theater. It was an independent art house theater.
And how was the response in terms of theater goers at that point?
It was great. I actually went to Salt Lake for the opening because I really wanted to be there and see what the sense was, because I did feel that there was a significant audience for this movie in Salt Lake. And I showed up to the theater. There was a line, halfway around the block. It played to a packed house, and it continued to play for a number of weeks there in Salt Lake. So we had a very successful run there.
And actually, as I said, and I congratulate you in the fact that not many independent films actually end up breaking even and start functioning in the black, but I believe yours has.
We're near it. We're kind of just at that mark. We actually made the movie for about $770,000, and we've already passed that mark in money that we've grossed.
Now, in terms of the support you got for it, even from the cast, I mean, it's amazing. And I do want to kind of switch back and forth when talking about the film, because I think it's in a sense, a reflection of societal support or lack of, and getting back into the bigger picture of religion and homosexuality. And I would assume that you've gotten emails and letters and stuff from people pro and con on all ends of it. But even in terms of looking at the cast, you got some amazing known actors and actresses to participate in this, as well as some amazing, in a sense, newcomers like Steve Sandvoss and Wes Ramsey. My understanding, you know, it's like this whole issue of gay or straight actors playing gay or straight roles type of thing. But they did an excellent job playing these gay characters. And you had people like Jacqueline Bisset and Mary Kay Place and Eric Palladino, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Amber Benson, you know, which are, I think, known names to the listeners, as well as people who aren't so well known. So it's really quite an amazing caliber of actors that you got to jump on board for this. How did you do that?
To kind of jump into this, I realized as a filmmaker, I was just so lucky. I mean, my first time out of the gate to be able to work with a stellar cast like that. It was the first movie for both of our leads, Wes Ramsey and Steve Sandvoss. Steve had just moved to Los Angeles 6 weeks before we met him, and he was just so perfect, and he actually kind of brought that to the role of this missionary who has just landed in Los Angeles and is a little wide-eyed and culture shocked.
and which was exactly the character he played.
Yeah, and so he was just wonderful performances, and it was just a pleasure to work with everybody in the cast. I realized Joseph Gordon-Levitt that he was sort of our seasoned pro the first day on the set, where you know he had this very successful long running series, and he'd been
Third Rock from the Sun, which was one of my favorite shows. So if people don't know that name, they'd know him as the youngest of the aliens on Third Rock from the Sun.
And you know, some people in the movie, it took them a while to recognize him and say like, hey, wait a minute, that's that guy. But he was so great because he had actually taken a couple of semesters off of his studies at Columbia University to make the movie, and we weren't paying anybody really much of anything, really low, scale, and we made him cut his hair for this role and everything, and I just thought, you know, here he was, this seasoned pro, and he could have showed up just saying, oh, I'm doing this dumb little movie for no money, and you know, I'm going to show up at 6 a.m. for just people who don't have a track record or anything, and he could have showed up with this attitude, but instead he just came with just this huge smile on his face, just saying like, hey, you know, we get to make a movie, and that was infectious. And I think that our other actors who were not as experienced as him, you know, they kind of cued off of him and realized like, oh, okay, that's how we behave, and it really set the tone for the entire shoot. And everybody who showed up, whether it was just for a day, like Eric Palladino, he shot all of his scenes in one day.
One day, Eric played a gay man with AIDS, kind of played off the so-called shallow Christian or Wes Ramsey's character, and really had some of the more poignant scenes in the movie, I think.
Yeah, and he was great. He showed up on the set, and he had taken clippers to his head, and then he'd done some research and realized some of the drugs that this guy might have been taking would make his hair fall out. So then he'd taken the scissors and just chopped big bald spots out of his head. And I was saying, dude, you look like crap, and you're only going to be shooting for one day. But that's how really committed everybody was to their roles.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
We are going to take a short break here, CJ, and when we come back, I want to kind of expand this in terms of the responses you've gotten, not just from other Mormons, although I'm sure and I know that you've gotten quite a bit of response from, you know, other gay and straight Mormons that may have related to some form of this film, but the feedback you've gotten from people outside the Mormon Church also in terms of religious issues.
Absolutely. I'd love to talk about that.
So we're going to take a short break here. This is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM in Phoenix. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back with CJ Cox and our topic today of homosexuality and religion.
Hi, I'm Derek Cox.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and we're here dealing with mental health issues from a holistic perspective and dealing with that sense of holism, which is body, mind, and spirit. Today's topic is homosexuality and religion. Now, also from that University of Phoenix website, under a section called Homosexuality and Religion, there is a frequently asked question, does the Bible condemn homosexuality? And what they write there is, some biblical scholars believe that the Bible condemns homosexuality, others do not. Different denominations use the Bible as a basis for their faith, yet beliefs between these churches can be quite diverse. Throughout history, some mainstream Christian churches have used the Bible to justify slavery, racism, child abuse, domestic violence, and sexism. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. used scripture to inspire those struggling to overcome racism. At the same time, others used the Bible to promote racial segregation and violence. Obviously, the Bible can be interpreted in many different ways. So basically, we're talking about interpretation of the Bible and rigid beliefs that that people hold that their interpretation is the only correct interpretation. And I guess that's what how it gets down to the conflict that many people have and the arguments that are even going on societally today about gay marriage, gay rights, and gay adoption, and, you know, everything that seems to be at the core, whether our Constitution should be amended to actually, for the first time, discriminate and take rights away from what the Constitution says is everybody's right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So today we're talking with C.J. Cox, who's the writer and director of a film that'll be opening soon in Scottsdale, in fact on June 11th, called Latter Days, dealing with the gay Mormon issue. And again, this is a live show. If you want to call in and make a comment or ask a question or give your opinion on something we're talking about, the number locally in Phoenix is 480-949-1310. CJ, before the break, we were talking about getting into the response you've gotten in terms of not just the reaction from gay or straight Mormons, but feedback you've gotten from people who have seen this movie and it touched them in some way or angered them in some way. What's been the response in terms of religious reaction to this film?
Well, it's been interesting religion-wise. I mean, we've gotten, I guess it's triggered quite a debate on the internet. There are a number of websites. There's an official site for the movie. It's latterdaysmovie.com, and there's a message board up there. There are also message boards, several other places on the internet that it's fired quite a discussion about between gay people and Mormons, and a lot of commentary from gay Mormons. But also there has been a lot of response from other people who were not raised Mormon but raised subject to any other number of religions. I've had responses from people who were raised Baptist and Catholic and Jewish, saying that the movie touched on a lot of issues for them. It's interesting because I have a couple of friends who were straight women. They were but they were raised very strictly Catholic, and they when they saw the movie, they said that they completely related to the main character and his dilemma of having to reconcile his sexuality with his religion, because they felt as straight, you know, being raised as Catholic girls, that they were taught that that they were not entitled to any form of sexuality,
mm-hmm.
and that the movie really touched them deeply because they felt that they shared the same conflicts with the main character.
And I know that it would be a pretty intense situation for a lot of Catholics looking at it because of the almost black and white stance on homosexuality that Rome takes, the Pope takes, which sometimes is different from local parishes. And I know also that there's a conference of Episcopalians going on in Long Beach this weekend, and they wouldn't even allow the local bishop to welcome them there because he's pro-gay, and this is a more conservative group of Episcopals who are trying to form their own wing now of the American Episcopal Church. So it's going on in all across the world now. So you've had Catholic reaction. How about any other denominational reactions or emails?
Well, I mean, yes, we've also, you know, talked about, I mean, it's triggered a discussion amongst a number of people. I mean, you talk about kind of the Episcopal Church, and there's this incredible discussion going on now with the appointment of you know, the first openly gay bishop in the Episcopal Church. And so a lot of people felt that the movie kind of reflected a similar, you know, a similar discussion that's going on, that it seems to have tapped into sort of this cultural zeitgeist that we have, where it's not just limited to Mormonism or Catholicism, but a number of religions are kind of grappling with that question amongst their believers. And you talk about biblical teachings and using all of those things as sort of to support one argument or another. And you know, I certainly hear that a lot. It's interesting because in doing some research and especially in writing this movie, that it did prompt me to reinvestigate a lot of my religious teachings that I'd been brought up with, and realizing that, you know, there is a lot of sort of people are trying to use the Bible as a basis for you know, not allowing gay marriage or things like that, or discriminating against gay people. But it's interesting, in all the teachings of Jesus in the New Testament, I mean, that he never mentioned the issue once. And It seemed like he did touch upon a lot of really important, vital issues for conducting our lives. And it seems like if this had been an issue, that it seems like he would have discussed it, at least, that he really... It seems to have been a non-issue. So it's interesting that while everybody is, you know, using the Bible to kind of support their viewpoints, and a lot of the resistance to gay marriage that you see is coming from a lot of people who describe themselves as Christians, that Christ actually never talked about the subject.
Well, also on the University of Phoenix website, they talk about the various sections of the Bible, and the one that's most often quoted is Leviticus. And they say something very interesting that I've heard but never saw put so specifically here. And what they say here, they quote the two passages, Leviticus 18:22 and 20:13.
Absolutely.
Which talks about man lying down as one, uh-huh. You know, that's an abomination. And then it goes on to say, first of all, the holiness code of Leviticus was written primarily as a ritual manual for Israel's priests. Christians today are not bound by the rules and rituals described in Leviticus.
Absolutely. That was one of the things, if, you know, people describe themselves as Christians and they truly ascribe to Christ's teachings, I mean, that was one of his basic tenets, that he was doing away with the Mosaic Code. So he said that no longer applies. But at the same time, the people who, I think the same people who are using those passages from Leviticus to bash gay people over the head, I'm wondering how recently they've sacrificed a ram, or, you know, whether they have ever, you know, eaten shellfish, or whether they wear clothing made of mixed fibers, because those are also, you know, those are also talked about, that they were also ruled against in Leviticus, and, you know, eating shellfish is described as an abomination.
Well, it that's part of what this says here, because it says in Galatians that, you know, they're not bound by those rules. And if Christians today insist on using this passage to condemn homosexuality, then they are also bound by the other rules and rituals described in Leviticus. And among them, the Holiness Code of Leviticus prohibits sexual intercourse during a woman's menstrual cycle. It prohibits tattoos. It prohibits wearing certain types of jewelry, eating certain kinds of meat, wearing clothing made from blended textiles, in other words, cotton and polyester blends,
right.
Crossbreeding livestock, sowing a field with mixed seed, eating or touching the dead flesh of pigs, rabbits, and some forms of seafood, and men cutting their hair or shaving their beards. The Holiness Code also endorses polygamy and requires Saturday to be reserved as the Sabbath, not Sunday. Obviously, it is unfair to use these passages to condemn homosexuality while ignoring the fact that most Christians do not follow the rest of the rules and rituals outlined in the Holiness Code of Leviticus.
Right. It just seems really convenient to be able to use one passage to support an argument about how people believe others should live, but choosing to overlook a lot of those other commandments.
Right. I'm actually looking at the discussion board, and I'm seeing you've gotten a number of emails and other missionaries actually writing in that, in a sense, needing some confidentiality, but, you know, talking about their own struggles as missionaries and dealing with this issue. How many others have come across your own path, current and or former missionaries that where the movie touched them in that way?
Well, it was interesting because when I started out writing the movie, I really thought that it was just something that me and, you know, maybe half dozen of my gay Mormon return missionary friends might truly understand. But I do have to say that in my experience that of those, let's say, half dozen return missionary gay Mormons, that the majority of them have either attempted suicide or gone through aversion therapy, which I think is that's pretty hardcore. And I think that these are really tough issues to face because there is such a dichotomy of belief in sexuality, and that's such a sort of core conflict that I think it really has the possibility to inflict some serious psychological damage.
And well, let's talk about, I actually was talking about today's show a few days ago with a guy that I had run into, and he is gay and has a gay brother, and the gay brother actually was forced into aversion therapy, and they're not Mormon. They were raised in another Christian denomination, and you know, it really left a lot of scars on the brother as well as on this guy, I believe, because of what he saw his brother going through, and this guy came out a little bit later than his brother. Is that something you were subjected to or known people that have had to go? Because I know it's something you depict in the movie.
Yes, we reference it in the movie, although we don't go into depth because I think there's, you know,
a whole movie in that as well.
Movies to be made about kind of that struggle. No, I fortunately, I feel like I got away with it or got away from Mormonism when it stopped working for me relatively unscathed, that I didn't go through aversion therapy or anything like that. But I do have friends who have told me in detail about their experience in that, you know, going through that voluntarily and on the campus of Brigham Young University, that it's kind of a fairly barbaric sort of ritual. And I think that it's not only bad science. I mean, psychologically, it just doesn't stand up, but it just doesn't seem to be very effective. And I think that it does a lot of damage that I think people, you know, the people that I know who personally have experienced this carry a lot of really deep emotional scars from that. And I think it's really, really dangerous. And the idea that parents would willingly subject their children to that kind of torture because they're so afraid that they might be gay is really kind of that's just barbaric. And also the idea that you know, you've got kids who feel that being gay is so terrible that their only option is suicide. And, you know, that's a continuing crisis. And I think we just have to really re-educate people that, you know, that's just not the case. It's funny because I did get a response from a woman who was not Mormon, actually, but she was saying that the worst thing that had ever happened to her was finding out that her son is gay. And I thought, honey, if that's the worst thing that's ever happened to you, you need to get out more because, you know, there are some pretty terrible things going on in the world, and this is not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like for me that, especially being gay, is just an inherent part of who I am. But not just that, but it's an incredible incredible gift that it allowed me to see the world from a different perspective, and that accepting that about myself allowed me to live more fully and joyously, and also allowed me to have a much deeper spiritual connection.
Well, let's talk about the parents for a minute, because I know a couple of months ago I did a show with a couple of a gentleman who is part of Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays in the Phoenix, one of the Phoenix chapters.
Uh-huh.
And in the movie, Mary Kay plays Aaron's mother, Mormon mother, who, when he was sent home in disgrace for being found out to, be gay, and went into the aversion therapy and stuff. That was actually one of the most powerful scenes in the movie, was her stoic and repressed shame and rage and
also fear, because I think she's,
fear,
yeah. That character is just coming from a tremendously fearful place.
Mm-hmm. And how her son's disclosure, or the word escapes me, but brought shame to the family.
Uh-huh.
And how was it in your family when you came out, in terms of, your parents being part of the Mormon Church, and have you gotten any response from other parents who have seen it that have appreciated the film?
Yes, I have. It's interesting, because in my own personal experience, I remember my father saying, when I came out to him, that he was just very saddened that I had made a choice that required me to be shunned by the entire world. And once again, I thought it kind of showed how little he knew of the entire world.
Well, shunned by his entire world, if you want to look at it that way, is what I'm sure his perspective was.
I guess that's from his perspective, maybe he saw it that way. But instead, I think it's, it opened me up to a much greater, broader experience of the world. But I have had responses from other parents, from other individuals who've seen the movie, and they have ranged from saying that their experience with their parents was just as harsh as was represented in the movie, to saying that they were really thankful that their parents were much more accepting and really loving and. Continue to love and accept their gay children.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's true across the board, regardless of what your specific religion is. I do think that people can be accepting or very critical, and I think it's oftentimes sort of a tough subject to deal with as parents, and it takes, I think, sometimes as gay people, it takes us a while to come to terms with ourselves and to come out to our parents. And a lot of times we expect our parents to immediately be accepting and embrace us, whereas oftentimes I think we need to allow them the same period to adjust to it and to kind of deal with their own feelings.
It's something you said, you hit it right on the head, because I when I'm working with people coming out of the closet, or at least newly coming out of the closet to their family, it's exactly what I said to them. It's like, I know myself that, I've been struggling with these feelings inside me since pre-puberty. I knew there was something different. I knew, that there were certain urges and attractions I had even before puberty. And so, what I say to people is, I had all those years of coming to terms with it and finally coming out and stuff. By the time I came out to my parents, it was just the beginning of that process for them. And a lot of people get to that point of coming out to their parents with such rage and defensiveness that they're looking to pick a fight. They want the scene that they've been fantasizing was going to happen all their lives. And sometimes it's like a preordained prophecy, It's
absolutely.
Like they create it.
And sometimes I think that we go into that kind of demanding immediate acceptance.
Right.
And not allowing parents that same period to adjust to it.
Yeah. And that's what I say to them. It's like the parents need a certain amount of respect, that now that it's on the table, even if they had been suspecting it, that now it's being dealt with more openly, and they need to be allowed, even if it takes years, they need to be respected enough and allowed a certain amount of time to do, go through their own struggle.
Absolutely. And it was funny because in researching the role of Aaron Davis's mother in the movie, Mary Kay, she ended up contacting a lot of parents online who had gone through similar things, and she said, you know, there were these amazing stories. And we came to the conclusion that her character, that's, you know, 5 years from the point that we last see her, she's probably going to be the president of the Pocatello chapter of PFLAG. But at the point that we see her in the movie, I mean, she's coming from just a terrified place, really, really angry and terrified and fearful of losing her son forever.
And
that's what she's been taught.
You know, and the other thing that came across about her is, number one, her husband retreated into his church. So he thought she didn't even have his support in this process and was very much alone in the process. In a sense, she had lost her son because he went back to L.A. Her husband wasn't showing up, and which seemed to be indicative of the relationship anyway, and she had no other parents to turn to because everybody then was shunning, which is, you know, excommunication, I know, in the Mormon church is one of the main solutions, once in addition to aversion therapy, that is turned to in terms of someone being gay.
Right. And, you know, and it's tough because I do think in her case, yeah, she does lose the support of her husband. I think that it's fairly common in my experience that since Mormonism is a lay church, that there is no paid clergy, the leadership is taken from within the church membership, and a lot of times that's really, really time-consuming. And so whereas in other places you see golf widows, a lot of times in the Mormon church you see church widows where these women are left to deal with their homes and their families and, you know, a lot of kids while their husbands are constantly at church meetings. And sometimes I think that that becomes sort of an escape for...
Well, and because of that, my sense of the husband also was the fact that even if his heart was wanting to reach out to his son, that would have meant losing his sense of prestige in the community as an elder, his whole sense of community, and he was really being faced with my church or my son.
Absolutely, and I just think that it's really sort of cruel that a church that really prides itself on being so much about family is in a position where it forces families to choose between, you know, their religion and their children, or children to choose between their religion and, you know, their families. That oftentimes separating oneself from the Mormon Church is synonymous with separating oneself from their family, because the two are often synonymous, and it can be really torturous.
Yeah. Now, I know we only have a couple of minutes left today. Is there anything you want to make sure you get out there or say before we close today's show?
Well, I guess one of the great things is that the Internet is a tremendous resource, I think, for children who are going through these issues, but also for parents that are, you know, dealing with this, because a lot of times in Mormonism, if parents, children, you know, they're dealing with that they do feel isolated. And fortunately, the Internet has become a wonderful community for also parents to support one another,
mm-hmm.
and find that support that they need.
And I know that you've had the, you know, compassion to actually a lot. I know that your opening here in L.A. was actually a fundraiser for the Trevor Project, which is a 24-hour suicide prevention hotline for gay teens, gay and lesbian, bisexual, and transgender teens.
Absolutely.
And I actually had George on,
yes,
as a guest about a month or so ago talking about the Trevor Project. And I really want to acknowledge you for making use of, you know, the podium, so to speak, that you have here to actually support others that are going through what you had gone through in your own coming out.
Yeah, absolutely. Just briefly, I mean, one of the most gratifying responses that I did see on one of these boards on the Internet was, I think, a 15-year-old boy who was Mormon, who was gay, who said that he had considered suicide. And the idea that all of a sudden there was this outpouring of love and support for him because of this discussion that had been started by the movie. And, you know, I just think that if that kind of discussion opens up kind of avenues of support that are alternatives to suicide for gay and lesbian and questioning youth, then, you know, all the better. Then it's really been worth it.
Yeah. CJ, I really want to thank you for taking the time to be on today's show. I want to thank you for the power of what you've written and produced and directed here in terms of Latter Days. So thank you very much for your efforts in general, as well as being here today to educate our community in Phoenix. And I want to remind people that Latter Days opens in Scottsdale at the Harkins Camel View 5 on June 11th. Go see it. Tell your friends about it. And if you want to get in touch with CJ, you could go to my website, tellthetruthfaster.com, and email him through that, or you can go directly to latterdaysmovie.com and email him through that if you have questions. And there's also the script has been put in novel form, and you can get that. It was adapted by T. Febbery. Called Latter Days. You can get that book, I'm sure, on Amazon. And in closing here, I want to read a letter to the editor from the LA Times going back to last February. And I think it's quite relevant. And it says, whether or not gay marriage is ever officially illegal in this country, there is one thing the Bush administration cannot change. The fact that I am a man who does not fall in love with women. Centuries of prayer, psychoanalysis, treatments, torture, imprisonment, hate crimes, and murder have failed to change men and women like me. Therefore, our gay marriages are equal because they fulfill our lives.
National and local news every hour.
I'm here to get the big story, the big scoop.
We're independent, 1310, KXAN. Lisa, Phoenix.
Bills, 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 pay my